welcome to the Grilling Truths NFL Legends Show, brought to you by Gridiron Mo. Gridiron Mo is a new interactive football app where you get to call what you think the offense or defense should do during a live NFL game and see what all other fans have also called. Check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. As always, I'm your host for the NFL Legends Show, Mike Goodpaster. And today I want to welcome into the show a man that I think is one of the greatest offensive line coaches in NFL history, Coach Jim Hanifin. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing well, Michael. Doing well.
All right. Hey, it's really great to have you on. And like I said before, to me, you and Jim McNally are the two best offensive line coaches I've ever seen. And we're going to have Coach McNally on tomorrow night, and it's really an honor to have you here.
Well, please give my very best to Jimmy. He's one of my all-time favorite guys, too. I mean, he and I have collaborated together and argued over the years. A lot of fun.
Yeah, you work these cool clinics every once in a while, don't you?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I think there's one in Cincinnati here in the next month or two. We're going to talk about that with Coach McNally tomorrow night. I think I'm going to go to that one. So tell us a little bit about your childhood and when you first developed your love for football.
Well, it was early on. I just started playing around and playing keep away like all kids do. And then I got to, my folks moved from Nevada down to Los Angeles, California, and I went to the Catholic grammar school, and I was like in the fifth grade, and five, six, seventh, eighth grade, and a little redheaded, freckle-faced Irish kid, and I got out there, and I started messing around with the rest of the guys, the sixth and seventh and eighth graders, and they moved me right on up to the point where, hell, I was starting for the eighth grade team, and it was just, it was a lot of fun, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it became my entire life, is what it became, my life, and I never looked back. It was always a fun thing for me to do.
Now, the one thing that surprised me, I knew a lot about you from the coaching, but didn't know a lot about your playing career. You actually were a wide receiver at the University of California.
No, we didn't have wide receivers by the time when I was playing. In 54, 53, 54, 52, we were, you know, I was a tight end. I was a tight end.
Yeah.
We threw the ball a lot, my senior year in particular, and I led the nation in receiving that year, that particular year.
Yeah, and you played 1 year in the CFL. What was that experience like for you in Canada?
I love playing up in Canada. Toronto, I played for Toronto Argonauts, and I really think the Canadian game, when I thought back on it later on, that's probably what I should have just stayed doing that for a period of time before I retired, because I like playing both ways, play defense and offense, and they got their money's worth out of me up there in Canada because I played just about 60 minutes a game.
So what led your decision to become a football coach?
The love of the game. The love of the game and the fact that I had two fellas that, well, actually, yeah, three fellas that actually did a lot for me in developing my character, my passion for the game, and that was my high school football coach, my high school basketball coach, my head coach in college football, Lynn Pappy Waldorf, and a defensive end coach by the name of Edgar Eggs Mansky, played for Northwestern and the Chicago Bears. Those four guys were very, very, very part of my life.
Now, you moved on to coach college football after high school in the mid-60s. Was your goal when you were in college to end up as an NFL coach?
No, I really didn't even think about the NFL, to tell you the truth. My goal was to become a head coach in college football. And I thought that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be that. I'd been a head coach at the high school level, the junior college level, and I enjoyed being the head coach. And so I was going to put my time in and being the coordinator or whatever it be, and so on and so forth, do my job, and eventually have one of those opportunities. But lo and behold, all of a sudden, I was with Don Coryell, and we came back here to St. Louis and with the St. Louis Football Cardinals, and all of a sudden the NFL opened its doors for me. And all of a sudden I went, well, wait a minute. I think down the road here I might be a head coach in the NFL. And lo and behold, it did happen, you know, so. Strange things happen,
I guess. You talked about that. You joined the Cardinals in 1973 under legendary coach Don Coryell. What was the biggest difference in coaching a college lineman as compared to an NFL lineman?
Well, the talent level. I mean, that even back then. I mean, the talent level. We only had, you know, not as many guys as they have today, but there's a lot of talent. We had a lot of talent there, offensive line wise. Tight end, the Hall of Fame tight end, Jackie Smith. We had a young rookie by the name, God bless him, J.V. Kane, who passed away much, much too young, you know, a heart attack. And we had Jim Hart, quarterback, and running backs, Terry Metcalf, Jim Otis. We had an explosive offense. So it was a lot of fun. We moved the ball well and so on and so forth. Coryell was a genius at that. He was a creative, very creative individual.
Yeah, now when Coach Coryell got to the Cardinals had a long history of losing. What did Coach Coryell do to really change the culture around in St. Louis?
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, I think the number one thing was the fact that the players all of a sudden realized they got a guy here that really truly is a player's coach. He would go to battle for him. He would fight for him. He loved the game. There was nothing phony about Don Coryell. I mean, what you saw is what you're getting. And they loved him. They absolutely loved him. They adored him, as did I.
Yeah, now, you had a great offensive line in St. Louis, guys like Dan Dierdorf, Conrad Dobler. You want to talk a little bit about that offensive line and the guys you coached in St. Louis?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll name the other three guys that you didn't mention, and that's Tommy Banks, who was an outstanding center, Pro Bowl center for me over those years. And the left guard, Bob Young, who was a great, great player. If Bobby had just come in a natural way, Bobby would have been a number one draft choice coming out of college, and then he would have attained stature immediately. He finally, after about his eighth or ninth year, made the Pro Bowl, because he was just kind of a lazy guy and so on and so forth. And I'll tell you right now, Bobby was special. He really was a special guy, special player, strong as an ox. He was the strongest guy in the NFL. Strongest guy in the NFL, and I mean, hey, he could lay the wood to you. And then my left tackle, I had Big Ernie McMillan. Big Ernie, I moved him from right tackle to left tackle, moved Dierdorf in at right tackle, where he, you know, attained Hall of Fame stature there. But Big Ernie, he moved over because I said, hey, look at Dan. This is Dan's natural spot at right tackle. I'll move you over here. Can you handle that? And he said, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And that's the kind of guy Ernie McMillan was. Then I had a youngster, Roger Finney, who became my starting left tackle maybe 2 years later. And what he was, we had traded for him on a goofy trade. I don't know why, but we gave up New York Jets a sixth-round pick for him. And he was a defensive lineman, defensive tackle. And all of a sudden, he's getting cut. We're cutting him. And I'm in the staff meeting that at night when the kid's getting cut. And I said, excuse me, coach. I said, can I take that kid, that Finney kid, and take him over and work with him for a couple of days? He goes, well, you really want to do that? And I said, yeah, I really would. So I take Roger over there, and I have him for 2 days. And Don comes to me after the second practice that I had him. He goes, well, what do you think about him? I said, take a look at him. I said, that's going to be our starting left tackle for the next 5 years. He goes, you're kidding me. I said, no, I'm not. I said, the kid's got, he's really got it. He had great, great feet, great, unbelievable athletic ability, and strong as an eye. I mean, he'd hit you, and I mean to tell you, and I'm like, God, it'd knock you on your keister. It was unbelievable. But he was a terrific player, terrific player.
Now, you guys were very successful in St. Louis. What led to Coach Coryell leaving for San Diego? I think, what, 1977?
Yeah, 77 was the last season that we were at San Diego. Well, I'll tell you what happened to him. He got all ticked off at management, ownership, and scouting. And our scouting really did suck. It was horrible. We couldn't get anything out of our scouting department. I mean, hey, if we got a guy out of the draft, it's pure accident. And everybody in town knew it. And I mean, hey, and the only guy, and I'll say this for Billy was very loyal to the scouts, more loyal to the scouting department than anybody else, than to any of the other departments, certainly the coaching department for damn sure. But anyway, scouting department just absolutely was terrible, and so we did it by hook or by crook. We'd get kids that were on the street, bring them in, and develop them. And that's what we had to do. As simple as that.
You returned to coach the Cardinals in 1980, still the same owner, the Bidwills.
Right.
And they'd had some rough years since Coach Coryell had left. Did you have any reservations about taking the job?
No, I really didn't, because I think I thought this way. I think I knew the problems. You know, where you can go somewhere else, a new place, and you don't know anything about it, but they got their problems, because there's a reason why you're getting hired. They fired the other guy. And so I went, no, you know what? I take the St. Louis job. I know the problems. I'm coming back here, and I got this. I got to get done. I got to get this done. And I did. We went like the first year. Shucks. We were the same as the previous staff, 5-9-1. But the next year we go 7-9. The next year we go 8-7-1. We kept on getting better. And then we got to a point where my next to last season, we were right there for the NFC East Championship. And we lose the damn thing to the Redskins.
That was the missed field goal by Neil O'Donnell right at the end of the game.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, we win that because the Redskins played the Bears the next week and just got demolished by the Bears. I mean, demolished. I mean, it was brutal. Real kick. Yeah. We had never lost to the Bears in my 6 seasons as the head coach. We knew the Bears. We knew the Bear 46 defense. Buddy Ryan's defense. And we knew it. We knew how to attack it. And obviously they only had 1 week. Joe Gibbs, dear friend of mine, Joe and his staff, they only had 1 week to prepare for the Bear 46. And that is a very difficult thing to do. We had time to learn about the Bear 46 in training camp. So when we play them in preseason, we play them in regular season, we'd get after their ass. And so it was enjoyable. It was very enjoyable.
Yeah, plus the Bears would have been playing that game with Steve Fuller instead of Jim McMahon, because McMahon was hurt for that playoff run for the Bears.
Right. That's correct. We would have gone pretty deep in there. Our defense wasn't as good as we'd like to have had it, but nevertheless, we would score a lot of points on the Bears, and we always did. And so I sat there at home and watched that demise of the Redskins against the Bears, and thinking, my God, if we just kicked that damn field goal. and Neil just missed it by a foot to the left.
Yeah, I think wasn't that like a 50 or 52 yarder also?
Something like, it was. You know, it was not a cheap shot. You know, it was not an easy deal. No, not at all.
Now you went on to coach with, you talked about Joe Gibbs, early to mid 90s. What were some of the things that impressed you the most about working with Coach Gibbs?
Well, he and I had coached together for 5 years at the Cardinals, and then another year at San Diego, and then when I came back, then there we are with 3 more years together, 9 years together. The thing that I thought regarding Joe was 2 things. One, his attention to detail. He was a real detail freak. I mean, he looked at every aspect of everything, and nothing was going to be missed. The second thing was his ability to keep an even keel. During a game, he never let his emotions go sky high or low. He stayed even. And his players responded to that. They never got too high nor too low themselves. I thought that was a key element in his coaching abilities.
Now, 1991, after coaching football for what, almost 30 years, what was it like to finally be on a sideline for a Super Bowl champion?
Oh, I'll tell you what, that fourth quarter was sweet. That fourth quarter was one of those things where you're going, I cannot believe it. I cannot believe it. We got them at that time 37-14, and I'm going, man, is that cool. We're going to get a ring. I'll be damned. It was a lot of fun. We had a heck of a team.
Yeah, and you coached with a lot of legendary coaches. I mean, after that, you joined the St. Louis Rams with Coach Vermeil in 1997, helped them to get the 2 Super Bowls, 1-1. Can you talk a little bit about Coach Vermeil, what he was like to work with?
Oh, he's a pistol and a half. I mean, I've known Dick Vermeil since we were coaching high school ball against each other, all the way high school, junior college, and then the pros. And then when he came to the Eagles, I was over here at the Cardinals with Coryell and so on and so forth, and And then when Dick came back to the Rams after that long retirement, he called me up right away and said, hey, you got to come with me. You got to come back out here to St. Louis. I got to have you with me. And I said, hey, Richard, I said, I'm coming with you. And so came out. It was a very enjoyable period of time in my life. And, of course, we won, got the two Super Bowls. Should have won both. And if Dick had not retired after the first Super Bowl, we would have won the second Super Bowl with him there.
No doubt.
We would have won with that.
Yeah, Marshall Faulk would have got the ball more in that second Super Bowl, I think.
There you go. You got that right.
Because I still don't understand how you have a legendary Hall of Fame running back that can do everything, and he only touches the ball 16 times in the biggest game of the year.
I know. And his hometown.
Yeah.
His hometown, New Orleans. Oh, I think you're sick.
Now, also with the Rams, you coached a guy who just recently got named. He's going to be inducted in the Hall of Fame this year, Orlando Pace. You want to speak about Orlando a little bit?
Well, he's an exceptionally gifted young man. I mean, he's really, really gifted. Mike, he's, you know, you're talking about a guy that's 6'7", 335, can run, bend his knees. He's got terrific athletic ability. I mean, he's a slam dunk type of guy in basketball. He could play college basketball. I'm not knowing about the NBA, but I guarantee he caused some problems in the Big Ten basketball. And the other beautiful thing about Orlando is that he's extremely coachable, very intelligent young man, and right from the get-go, he and I have developed a terrific relationship, still have that today, and I'm so elated and happy for him, and which is where he should be. He should have gone in last year. He should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But that didn't work.
Yeah, a lot of times you know how it is. Linemen get overlooked. I think Alan Faneca, the Pittsburgh Steeler lineman, should be in.
I agree with it. I worked Alan out. I was hoping I could get Alan in the draft, but I didn't get him. But I followed his career. He had a great career.
Now, you had success everywhere you coached. What do you attribute that to? I mean, did you do anything, drills, attitude, psychologically, film study, anything like that differently than anybody else, or?
Well, that I can't. I really don't know because you don't know how the other guys are doing it. But I really I spent a lot of time with that offensive line technique-wise. And as a matter of fact, I've just written a book. It took me over 3 years to write this book on offensive line play and drills and techniques. So in that book, I've taken all the techniques and drills or the drills that I've used to develop the techniques that I thought was the important techniques. And so that book, we just published it, my partner and I just published it. Now it's just Jim Hanifman. Anybody that's interested in it can get it at jimhanifman@amazon.com.
Yeah, so make sure everybody checks that out because I guarantee you I will buy it because that's why I asked you on the show was the book. Talk a little bit offensive line. What's your opinion of offensive linemen today, technique-wise, compared to 20, 30 years ago?
They're getting screwed, but it's a good deal for them. And the fact that they're not getting hurt, they're not getting pounded on during the week. But hey, they only get to be in a 16-week season. They can only be in pads 14 times in 16-week preparation, 16-week season, 14 times. Well, let me ask you this, Mike: how can you get better technique-wise, just getting out there once a week in pads? You can't. You can't get better. You're going to get worse is what you're going to get.
Yeah.
If you attain a certain level and you maintain that level, you've got to practice and you got to do it. And it just cannot, you can't cheat your way around on it. I mean, that's just the way it is. And so they the owners copped out to the players and the players and the CBA got what they wanted. They wanted all that freedom. They wanted all that, no more pads, no more. There's no more two-a-days. Two-a-days. You remember two-a-days and how grueling two-a-days
yeah.
were.
I remember three-a-days even in high school.
There you go.
And Steve, right. I think they shortchanged the players that way. And, I mean, I think the other thing that's really slipped is just the ability to coach offensive linemen at the high school and college level from what I've seen.
I agree with that, too. I agree.
Especially
there
if you get a guy like Orlando Pace, if you get him today and you're a high school coach, I've known a ton of high school coaches that have a big offensive line. They don't teach him anything because, really, if you're an offensive tackle at most high schools, you're 6'7", 300 pounds. Let's face it, you're going up against a defensive end that's probably 230 pounds, and no matter what your technique is, the guy's not getting around you.
Right. There's no question about that. No question about that. And as a matter of fact, see, Orlando came out of Ohio State after his junior season. Now, he's been all Big Ten. He's been this, he's been that. And the first day we get together, he and I, at first mini camp, in training camp, and I looked at him, I went, oh, no. He goes, what? I said, your stance. I said, we're going to start with from the stance, and we're going to do everything. We're changing you all over again. And he talks about it in my book. He goes, yeah, he did. It's what he did to me. He stripped me down to the bare minimum, and we started all over.
Yeah, it's just like I had Mark Coopers on my show a lot. Mark played for the Denver Broncos, played guard on the Super Bowl 21 team, and he talks about going down to watch the Miami of Florida linemen. This was like 15 years ago. And he goes, he sits in the meeting with the coaches, and the technique's bad. He brings it up to the coach, and the coach says, well, as long as nobody's getting by him, we're not going to worry about it.
That's it. There you go.
And I'll tell you another thing with the lack of practice. If you notice, I think there's a lot more injuries today, even if they're just smaller ones. And I think a lot of that's just because they don't train themselves for the contact anymore.
No, because, hey, every day was out there on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you're hitting. You were hitting. Now, you know, we're going to ease it off on Friday, but Wednesday, Thursday, hey, it's full go. 9-on-7s, 11-on-11s, hey, 1-on-1s, it's all full go.
All right, so if you're watching a new offensive lineman you haven't seen before, what is the first thing you'd look at to tell you whether that's a guy you want on your team or not?
Well, it sounds crazy when I tell you this, but feet, the recoverability. Does he have balance? Does he have quicks? Can he bend his knees, and so forth? And most guys cannot bend their knees. They can't do it. You cannot do it, and that's what I look at.
The one thing I've really noticed is the lack of guys in college, even the NFL, to be able to kick step properly.
True. Same deal. I mean, it's all recover. The bottom line, a lot of times, the key on, say for example, Orlando. If he could get maybe out of position at times here or there, but you know what? He had that unbelievable ability to recover. Recoverability is so key to an offensive lineman. To be able to be off balance, et cetera, et cetera, still be able to get back in balance and recover and be able to do it. And, this takes a special guy to be able to do all that stuff.
Now, I had an email from a guy named Joe Rodriguez in New York. He said he would be interested in what goes into coaching and preparation during a game week in the NFL. So what kind of thing you guys go through Monday through Saturday?
Well, you're spending hours and hours and hours on that, and you start in on Monday evening, and because you're through now with the previous game, so you're sitting there, you kind of separate yourself from the other guys, the other coaches, et cetera. And you sit there and you start looking at the film of your opponent. Now, you start jotting down things you think should go run-wise, what kind of protections, what kind of problems do they present to you. And now, the next morning, you walk in here, because you leave Monday night about, 9:30, 10 o'clock. Next morning, you come in there, say, 8 o'clock, and you start, again, you're back in there looking at the film, and now you finally meet, say, about 10 o'clock as an offensive staff. Now you're spending the rest of the morning and part of the afternoon discussing your first and second down plays, okay, and your formations and motions and all the things that you're going to do. And you do that. Now, then you draw all that up. Now, that night, Tuesday night, now you go back down, and now you start looking at short yardage goal line. Okay, short yards, the nickel, third down nickel stuff. So you go to the nickel and dime formations, et cetera, and you do that, your pass protection and your pass patterns, what you're going to do that. Okay, now you prepare that. The next day you get together again with staff-wise, and you formulate that deal. Now next night you do the short yards goal line, okay? And now you finally have got your entire game plan. You guys, it's in their hands. Their hands on Friday morning, everything, including short yards goal line. Okay? So it puts in a lot of hours.
Yeah. But the way it sounds, you wouldn't choose to do anything differently if you had it to do all over again.
No, I wouldn't. There's not one thing I would do differently. No, I'd put the you got to put the time in. You got to put the hours in.
Now, how do you want people, especially the guys that played for you, how do you want to be remembered as a coach?
I'd like to be remembered as a guy that I was a good guy. I listened to them. I was fair, and I tried to help them as much as I could. And
right.
I had great loyalty to them, and I expected a loyalty from them to me.
All right. Well, hey, it was great. It was an absolute honor to have you on the show. I mean, I think
you
already
Michael.
Know how I feel about your ability to coach football as compared to most any other offensive line coach I've ever seen. And it's truly been a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Well, my pleasure. You came up with great questions. Great questions. It was easy to discuss things with you. And I appreciate
that. Thank you. So I've coached football for the last 20, 25 years. Actually, I'm an arena football coach right now, so I might be calling you for
Good.
A little advice with offensive linemen, if that's all right, too, in the future.
Sure.
Also, I want to remind everybody, your good friend Jim McNally is going to be on tomorrow also, so we'll just knock out the two best offensive line coaches of all time right back-to-back.
Okay, give him my very best. Tell that son of a gun I love him to death. All right.
I definitely will. So,
okay.
Everybody, make sure you turn into the group. Hey, Coach, did you want to give your website again, where to get your book? Was that Amazon?
Yeah, it's Jim Hannifin, Offensive Line Play at Amazon.
All right. And we will put a link to the Amazon for your book up on our Grueling Truth Facebook page and up on our website when we get that up and running here in the next couple of days also, so people can find it on there just in case they don't have anything to write with right now. So make sure you check us out on the Grueling Truth Facebook page. The rest of the week, we will have former right tackle Bruce Reimers from the Cincinnati Bengals tomorrow, followed up by his offensive line coach from the Bengals, Jim McNally. Thursday, we will have Greg Bingham, former Houston Oiler offensive lineman. And then for next Monday so far, we have Buford McGee from the Los Angeles Rams. He will be on next Monday night. So make sure you check out our sponsors, Gridiron Mo, www.gridironmo.com. Check out steelbergbox.com, realbanglefans.com. So for Jim Hannifin, this is Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.